Welcome back to Occult Symbolism of Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisab. Today we are in part two of That 70s Show Conspiracy. Surely you've already listened to part one. In part one, let me do a quick little spiel on it. Because we're going through a whole bunch of different talking points and different conspiracies and different ideas. In part one, we went over the cast of That 70s Show and some of the things they've done and some of the, you know, questionable behaviors. And then we went through the trial of Danny Masterson. The trials, the timelines, the statements made. And we talked about Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis' supporting statements of Danny and then their apology tour. And today we're going to part two, which in part one we started talking about Scientology a little bit here and there. Now we're going to talk about Scientology as it pertains to the realm of the occult and some key figures and questionable connections here between Jack Parsons and Charles Manson and Danny Masterson, even like the world's second greatest actor, Tommy Cruise, Laura Prepon. And then we're going to talk about as it pertains to this trial. And then we're going to talk about Chrissy Carnell Bixler's accusations. And then we start talking about Ashton Kutcher. But then in part three, we're going to dive deep into Ashton Kutcher. And boy, oh boy, what a doozy. What a doozer of a doozy. We're going to talk about Ashton Kutcher in part three in depth. But part two, we're going to talk about Scientology a little bit more. Because we need to know a little bit more about it so that in part three, when we wrap this all together, we can have some kind of idea of what's really going on. All right? So now why on earth are we going to talk about the Church of Scientology? Well, besides the relevance involved in this case, which we alluded to a little bit earlier, you know, actors Danny Masterson, Laura Prepon, as well as the people accusing Danny of rape, they are all members or former members of the Church of Scientology. And of course, there's the occult element we bring up in our research. Oh, and a quick shout out. I want to shout out you listeners. I appreciate you and I thank you for listening to my show. We're in a real weird time where free speech is always under attack. I mean, it always is, right? But if you watch TikTok and Instagram, it's cringy because we're talking about this situation. And the people who are commenting on it are more or less forced to say the word grape instead of rape. It's a word. Can we just say the word? But you know, big tech, all the, and this is going to play more into the part three criticisms of Ashton Kutcher and Thorne and surveillance and technology as the savior to all of this. You know, big tech, it's insane. You can't say kill or death. You have to say unalive, and you have to say graped. Oh, he graped her. Like, are we children? Are we all just children? Like, on the one hand, I get why they do that, because that TikTok and Instagram and Zuckerberg and all these people, they ban you for using words. You know, I've had my share of getting kicked off of platforms. I get it. But on the other hand, it's like, I don't want to cater to that. Like, that's ridiculous. I'm saying the word. I don't know. It just bugs me. So I thank you that you're an adult and you listen to the show, and I don't have to sit here on videos and say, then he unalived her and then he graped her. Like, it's a world I don't want to be a part of. I don't want to contribute to that. I get why it happens. Sometimes I use coded language. Like, I get it. But part of me wants to just, I don't know. I just want to gripe about that for a second, but I do want to thank you. Thank you for listening to the show and being an adult and not whatever. Whatever is contributing to that sort of odd behavior, I hate it. That's no shade. Like, I get it. I get why people do that, but it's like, I don't want to contribute to that. You know, YouTube does it. TikTok does it. Instagram does it. They make their content creators use these goofy words. Okay. Now, Scientology. There is an occult element there, all right? As you know, L. Ron Hubbard was the founder of the Church of Scientology, and we've talked about it many times, many, many times. Over the last, 9 years I've been podcasting. We know, and most infamously, he worked with Jack Parsons on a ritual called the Babylon Working. All right? So yes, L. Ron Hubbard knew Aleister Crowley on some level. I don't know how close. Jack Parsons knew Aleister Crowley on a personal level. And what Jack Parsons did was he said, "Hey, Crowley, I want to incarnate the Whore of Babylon so that I can impregnate her and make the Antichrist so that we can end the world as we know it and destroy Christianity. The lying hypocrisy of Christianity," as he said. And Crowley was like, "Okay, cool. Here's a ritual. It's called the Amalanche We're Working. And I use it to make contact with aliens like Lamb." And Parsons is like, "Okay, cool. We're going to call this the Babylon Working because I'm going to incarnate the Whore of Babylon. And I'm going to use L. Ron Hubbard as my scribe." Because if you look back at the origin of all this, John Dee and Edward Kelly, back in the Middle Ages, they used to do rituals to contact the Enochian angels. They wrote this language down, and Edward Kelly was the scribe. All right, they both played a part in channeling entities, we'll say. All right. So, and poor L. Ron Hubbard, you know, he's out in the deserts with Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons is very eccentric and doing all this wacky stuff, and L. Ron Hubbard was out in the desert watching him play with his ding-dong, invoking the wand, as one would say, because that was part of the ritual. Took course over a couple weeks, and the product was, of course, him meeting a woman named Marjorie Cameron. Now, of course, there's all these different elements of what the purpose was and what they were really doing. If you want more on that, 6 years ago, I did 3 shows on Marjorie Cameron where we talked about the different interpretations of what the Babylon Working was and what her role was. Then earlier this year on Breaking Social Norms podcast, that's the one I do with my wife. It's very opinion based, but in that there was like 2 or 3 episodes we did on Parsons. I walked her through. She's the normie, right? And I had this sort of red pillar on who Jack Parsons was, and we talked about it. So, there's a book called The Wormwood Star about the life and times of Marjorie Cameron. Marjorie Cameron was the spirit of Babylon evoked by Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard during the Babylon Workings. And in that book, it talks about L. Ron Hubbard and Scientology, of course, because L. Ron Hubbard took part of the ritual. And L. Ron Hubbard wrote the book Dianetics, and he considered it a more popular route to self-realization than Thelema. Now, Thelema, of course, was Aleister Crowley's religion. Crowley was talking to a spirit named Awaz, considered him his holy guardian angel. Awaz told him to write all this stuff down. He writes it down, calls it the Book of the Law. And that was the book for Thelema, his new religion, introducing the do what thou wilt axiom for the new age, the Aeon of Horus. Well, Ron Hubbard, he's like, "I want in on this religion action too. I'm writing a book called Dianetics. And this is going to be a different way, a more popular way to find self-realization than Mr. Aleister Crowley's Thelema." Now, this bothered Marjorie Cameron, you know, because her and Jack Parsons, they thought the world of Aleister Crowley. And she thought L. Ron Hubbard took some of his ideas from the Dianetics book and Scientology from Jack Parsons and coupled them with initiation rituals from the Ordo Templi Orientis, a magical order, you know. Allegedly, right? And this is all from a book called The Wormwood Star. I've never formally studied Scientology. I don't actually know what's in it. I've seen the South Park episode. I don't know how true that is, but, you know, and to be fair, every religion's a little wacky, all right? Let's be honest about it. They all sound a little kooky, but I think it's real. I think kooky is a real world. I think we do live in a kooky world. You know, you do enough hallucinogens, you start to realize that the material realm is not quite what it seems. And I don't know what the answer is. I certainly don't. Now, Peter Lavenda, you want to learn about the occult, you go to Peter Lavenda's works. This guy knows it. I am certain of that. I've tried to get the guy on my show many times. I've had people reach out to him many times. I can't quite make it happen. And that's all right. It's okay. But I want that to happen. He knows all the answers. Now, is he pro magic and occult? I would assume so. I think so. I don't know that, but either way, his books are very detailed on what's going on. And he's got a book called The Dark Lord, which I highly recommend. Very dense material. I'm going to read you right from the book. In the early years of the movement, he would often claim, this is L. Ron Hubbard, sorry. In the early years of the movement, he would often claim to have met Aleister Crowley and to praise him in speeches and talks he gave to his followers. Later, he would drop all references to Crowley and downplay his involvement with the Parsons Lodge of the OTO. Now, I believe Peter Lavenda, he's got, I think he's got an occult angle on things, but I think he knows some stuff. So he's a well-researched guy. Now let's talk about Charles Manson. Arguably the most intriguing person in the history of all people. I mean, there's a lot of things you can say about the guy. But interesting is definitely one of them. Intriguing guy, a fascinating life. Man, I don't even know where to start with it, but I'm going to talk to you about how he had affiliations with the Church of Scientology. He had listed it as his religion when he was incarcerated. We're talking in the early 60s, not... This is pre-Tate LaBianca murders, all right? And Wikipedia will tell you that he got out of prison, sort of left Scientology, but continued partying with the Scientology folks. We'll come back to that. If you read, there's a book written by Charles Manson called Manson in His Own Words, where he talks about his experience with the Church of Scientology. I'm going to read to you right now from it. The subject that interested me was understanding and knowing my own mind. I studied hypnotism and psychiatry. I read whatever books I could find and understand that dealt with mind development. A cell partner turned me on to Scientology. With him and another guy, I got pretty heavy into Dianetics and Scientology. Through this and my other studies, I came out of my state of depression. So there you go, man. He came out of his depression through Scientology. That's a good thing, right? We can't condemn that. But fact remains, he did in fact study it. He says it right there from his own words. And later on in the book, he talks about linking up with Bruce Davis. That was kind of, if I'm not mistaken, his sort of right-hand man. If I recall, because I used to be real heavy into Charles Manson stuff. I read a bunch of his books and, you know, my whole history with it, with my father and stuff. But, in fact, I just recorded, a month or two ago on the supporters feed for Patreon and all the supporters only, the story of how I ended up at Barker Ranch to spread my dad's ashes. Fascinating story. Supporters only, though. So sign up. Support your boy. Your favorite show ever. Go ad-free. Anyway. But yeah, Bruce Davis was like his number two. And, you know, Bruce tried to emulate Charles. And Charles kind of emulated Bruce, from what I understand. But Bruce Davis was also interested in Scientology. Now, if you read another book called The Shadow Over Santa Susana by a prolific writer named Adam Gorightly, he was a guest on this exact show many years ago. I think we're going back to 2015. He, in fact, blessed us with the last interview that he would do about Charles Manson ever. That's what he said. And we've got it right here on the record. But that book, if you're interested in the things I talk about and Charles Manson, I'm telling you, you got to read The Shadow Over Santa Susana, because dude's dropping massive bombs. I'm going to read to you from it right now. I got these in note form. I jotted notes down from the book. He was talking about how while Charles was in jail, he studied hypnotism, subliminal motivation, Rosicrucianism, Scientology, and Freemasonry. His auditor, an auditor is a term in Scientology. I believe that's the one that sits on the other side of the E-meter and audits you to, make sure you're clear. His auditor was Lanier Rayner, and he was a person who studied directly under L. Ron Hubbard. So very close connections to the big dog himself. Manson claimed he was actually a Theta Clear, which makes him an operating Thetan. Now, this is really high up. Jesus and Buddha, they were not even operating Thetans, but Charles Manson was, which would explain his ability to mind control people. Because L. Ron Hubbard said that operating Thetans can read people's minds and move objects through thought, and they could materialize objects. Now, there's a lot of weird speculation about what Charles Manson could and could not do. He infamously had a bus up there at Barker Ranch, and I've taken the drive up to Barker Ranch, and I'm telling you right now, that bus, no way in hell did it go up Gola Wash Canyon. No way, no how, it's impossible. And I've read that there's an alternate path you can take, but it's like way out of the way to go through the other side of it. I don't know if that's true. But the family claims that he levitated that bus to get it up to the Barker Ranch. Now, I actually talked to my wife about this. She recalls seeing the bus when we went up to Barker Ranch, but I don't remember doing that. I don't think it's there anymore. Anyway, doesn't matter. Supposedly, Charles Manson moved a bus, teleported a bus. And that would make sense if he's an operating Thetan, and that stuff is true. He also supposedly brought a bird back to life. Now, Scientology also allegedly taught Charles Manson different phrases that he would use to sort of control his family. Phrases like mocking up, cease to exist, which was the name of the song that the Beach Boys basically stole from Charles Manson, true story, putting up pictures, man. Now, after his 1967 release from prison, he was in prison many times. He didn't stay out for too long, right? But after 67, he got released. He met in Los Angeles with a bunch of Scientologists and even attended the initial dedication of the Scientology Celebrity Center, a very famous Scientology center, which is pretty remarkable, right? And this is the one that Chrissy Bixler posted a photo on her Instagram stories of Danny Masterson, Ashton Kutcher, and Mila Kunis getting an award or something at this Celebrity Center by, I think it was David Miscarriage handing it to him. Adam Gorelli also says that the police found Church of Scientology literature when they arrested the family for the Tate LaBianca murders. So Wikipedia seems to imply that he was completely out of Scientology. Maybe that's not true. Also, Adam's book talks about how a guy named Paul Krasner wrote that there was an E-meter at the Spahn Ranch, and Charles Manson visited the Celebrity Center in L.A. Of course, we already know that. But Krasner supposedly has a Church of Scientology log that shows Manson visiting it on July 31st, 68. And they listed him as a type 3 psychic. Also, I'm telling you this, The Shadow Over Santa Susana is just like, it's a jaw-dropping book. Manson planted suggestions to prisoners via headsets for them to cheer for him at a prison talent contest while they slept, and he in fact did win. He studied Freemasonry in prison and hand signals that he would later flash at judges infamously. And he learned a lot of these from a guy named Creepy Carpus. During a 1987 Geraldo interview, it's alleged that he did symbols, trying to signal to a underground satanic group. Charles was interviewed during the Tate-LaBianca trial, and he said this: "Freemasons have that power. It's a secret that's been handed down since the pharaohs, the secret wisdom. Jesus knew the symbols. The preacher and the judge got a hold of the symbols, and they kept them to themselves." Huh. And while Charles was in prison, he was, you know, meditating like a monk the whole time, and he said he was able to project the entire universe. And during his 1960s release, he found the world to be illusory on both sides of the fence, inside and out of prison. And even the idea that one is inside or outside is a deception. He thought that one could be as free in the prison as they could in the real world. And one of his quote, one of my favorite quotes from Charles Manson is, he says, "The way out of the room is not through the door. Just don't want out and you're free." It's pretty wild. Anyway, so Charles Manson, lots of connections there to Scientology as well. And then we've got Stanley Kubrick. You know, he's one of my favorites. I've written the book Kubrick's Code, and I've done, I don't even, countless episodes on Eyes Wide Shut. And in Eyes Wide Shut, as you know, he casted Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. And they were both members. I think, was Nicole a member? She must have been. I should fact check that. So that, because I would assume she would have gotten out, but let me look it up real quick, and I will. Usually, I have a little more polished hair. This Vogue article says they made choices to be Scientologists, and as a mother, it's my job to love them. Okay. Oh no, it says Kid. Oh, good thing I looked up Mercury News. Kidman never became a Scientologist, which supposedly made her what's known in Scientology parlance as a suppressive person. But then the showbiz cheat sheet says Nicole Kidman doesn't practice Scientology anymore, but she did learn a lot of it while she was with Tom Cruise. Okay, well, I don't know. It seems like she never fully committed to it, if she was into it. But Tom Cruise definitely into it. So it is curious that he would cast them. And plus, if you watch Eyes Wide Shut, you'll know there's a scene where Nicole Kidman's character, Alice Harford, makes love to a stranger, a naval officer, a hot, sexy naval officer. And it drives Dr. Bill Harford crazy. It's driving Tom Cruise crazy. But you know that, because you probably listened to all my Eyes Wide Shut episodes, that in the book Dream Novella, Trom Novelle, that this movie is based upon, there is not a naval officer. There's a military officer, but not a naval officer. So it seems Kubrick chose a naval officer, which L. Ron Hubbard was, in fact, an intelligence naval officer. Now, Kubrick's daughter, Vivian, actually left England, where Stanley and his wife lived, for the United States and joined the Church of Scientology. And she started disconnecting from her family. And supposedly that's what the Church of Scientology wants from its followers, because they are suppressive persons. This is in the making of his final film. It's a book about the making of Eyes Wide Shut, written by Culker and Abrams. So Kubrick, did he have a beef with Scientology? I don't know, man. I don't know. That's the big question about Kubrick. Which side was he on? Was he trying to expose it? Or was he making, you know, propaganda love stories for the occult? It's hard to say. But now that we have a fair little background, to know that anytime the Church of Scientology gets brought up, we think about all these various theories. But to be fair, the Church of Scientology did help Manson with his depression. So, hey, not all that bad, right? And just like we talked about at the end of part one with Ashton and Mila writing letters for Danny. You know, Danny's not all bad. There's good sides to him, but, you know, the bad parts were real bad. So now he's got to go to prison. And, you know, if Scientology is good enough for Tom Cruise, the world's second greatest actor, it's got to be all right. Maybe, right? I don't know. Never tried it. I don't know. Now, let's talk about Scientology in the trial. And we're going to go to Jessica Reed Krause's Substack. She has an article going through the differences in the court trials from the first time to the retrial. Now, I follow her, and a lot of people criticize, and they're like, oh, she's a gossip blogger, journalist, and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the mainstream media is very hard to believe. Those people do the best. I mean, I don't know if they're overworked. I don't know if they're paid to push a certain narrative. But they seem to leave a lot of details out of a lot of things, just generally speaking. And you can see that, you know, sometimes they've got some, what do you call it, like conflicting interests, right? We all saw this with the thing from 2020 that will never go away. You know, Big Pharma's got a lot of money they pump into these news organizations with advertising. Have you ever watched Fox News or CNN? Every commercial is some Big Pharma product. So, of course, you're not going to get into the truth about Big Pharma. Not entirely. Let's go to her article on the eve of Danny Masterson sentencing, emphasis on Scientology during the second trial. Let's see. Okay, Megan explains the differences between the two trials. So, a different person, not Jessica, a person named Megan. I don't know who that is. The second time around, there was much more emphasis on Scientology, which she believes may have contributed to a guilty verdict following a hung jury. Okay, Megan Cuniff is her name. And she said this. There was always this layer of Scientology there, especially in the first trial. It was just kind of a mystery. Masterson was a lifelong member of the Church of Scientology and remained in good standing. Because of his celebrity status, many considered him untouchable. The prosecutors drilled this point in court, explaining that if one of his victims tried reporting any of his wrongdoings to the church, they would have likely been dismissed, ignored, or shamed, which is kind of what the Jane Does said their experience was. The Church of Scientology claimed one of Masterson's victims couldn't sue because she had signed an arbitration agreement which signed away her rights to pursue any lawsuit. The prosecutors used the Church of Scientology's strict privacy policy and arbitration agreements to explain to the jury why the charges brought forth against Danny were so old. Because the rapes happened like 20 years ago. So that's why Scientology got brought into this case, because you can't really separate the two. At least that, you know, from what I'm reading, that's how I understand it, and that's my opinion. Earlier, we mentioned a woman named Chrissy Carnell Bixler and her husband, Cedric Bixler Zavala. Chrissy and Cedric, all right? Now, Cedric is the lead singer for rock bands Mars Volta and At the Drive-In. I Google, and they're being... Their statements have been used in a lot of news articles since the sentencing of Danny Masterson. And I Googled his name to find his Instagram, and it seemed like it was gone. The Google search results page showed one day ago that he said, "This is an appreciation post for the people who helped put Danny Masterson away for rape. Thank you for being dot, dot, dot." And I thought, whoa, dude, they shut his Instagram down for saying, you know, "That's great. We put this rapist away. That's crazy. Why would they shut him down?" So my conspiracy mind starts going, well, I'm going to save you a lot of trouble and a lot of time, and I'm going to give you what really happened. A little background. Last year, like May of 22, I posted a Instagram reel video of Esperanza Spalding and John Legend. Esperanza Spalding, she's like a female, I think she's a singer. She does the hand gestures of the Baphomet, the two fingers up, two finger down, the two finger salute. Means as above, so below. You can see the Baphomet goat with the boobs doing it, all right? Now, you could argue, because people said that Tiffany Gomez, the airline lady, they're like, oh, she did it. And it's like, well, it kind of flashes as she's doing her movements with her arms. I don't know that that's not the same. This was legitimately purposeful, if you haven't seen it. Because she does it for the camera or something, and then she freezes, and then she looks over at John Legend, and she goes, whoops. All right. That's what makes it really strange. So I posted the video, and and here's the thing is I recalled Cedric commented on this. All right. I had to look it up because that video went viral. There was a couple million viewings of it. Celebrity surfer, Kelly Slater commented on it, and Cedric Bixler Zavala commented on it. And I know because like, I saw the blue check mark come across. I said, oh, who's this? You know? So I recalled it because I thought, because I had never heard of Mars Volta or At the Drive-In. Not my speed. I just didn't know who they were. I've heard of the bands. I couldn't tell you a song they sing. And I thought, man, that's weird that I couldn't find his account. And I thought it was blocked. I thought someone banned him or something. I thought, let me look on that video. And I scrolled through all these comments and I found his comment, which by the way, he said, try harder, laughy emoji, laughy emoji, laughy emoji. All right. And I click him. And it takes me to his page, and it says no posts, and then it won't show me followers, posts, who's following him, nothing. And I was like, oh, that's weird. So I Google, how do you know if someone blocked you on Instagram? Sure enough, he blocked me. And then I confirmed it. I pulled it up on my buddy's phone. I said, this son of a gun, he blocked me. Why did he block me? I don't know. So no conspiracy. Conspiracy debunked, all right? But he apparently blocked me sometime after because when he first commented, I saw him and I clicked him and I said, oh, crap, that's a guy. That guy's famous or whatever, right? So it happened sometime after that. But that's why I couldn't find his account. No clue why he blocked me, but he did. All right. Now, Cedric is an interesting character. He was in a band in the 90s called Foss, which, fun fact, had a guy named Beto O'Rourke on the bass. That's right, the famous Beto O'Rourke from, I think it's El Paso, Texas. But anyways, in 2009, he married model Chrissy Carnell, and this is where things get really interesting. Let's read from Wikipedia. In November 2017, he said in a pair of tweets that actor Danny Masterson had sexually assaulted his wife and that he wrote At the Drive-In song, Incurably Innocent, about the alleged incident. Bixler Zavala was a member of the Church of Scientology and had credited Scientology with his changed attitude on the use of drugs, just like Danny Masterson allegedly was telling, you know, Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis and all these people to stay off of drugs. All right, see, not all bad. He attended the Church of Scientology Celebrity Center event in 2013. In 2015, Bixler Zavala spoke about his decisions to stop smoking marijuana. I was spending $1,000 a week on weed, he said, and rationalized his use by believing it made him more creative. When he later came to realize, I was using it to form the stoned bubble that helped me justify not wanting to interact with people. It's actually kind of funny. However, by 2017, he had become a harsh critic of Scientology, calling its self-help volcano as barren as a floating needle, a placebo of sugary Kool-Aid, and accusing it of silencing sexual assault victims and of harassing both him and his wife. In 2018, he accused it of covering up his wife's alleged sexual assault and called it a modern-day version of The Handmaid's Tale. In 2020, Bixler Zavala's dog died after allegedly eating raw meat laced with rat poison that had been tossed into their yard. Bixler Zavala alleged that the Church of Scientology was responsible, though they have denied the accusations. So now you can see there's pretty close associations there. Chrissy and Cedric were both members at one point. And I found the tweets on metalsucks.net going back to November 16th, 2017. He said, "My wife is one of Danny Masterson's rape victims. Of course, Danny, being the scumbag he is, outed her by name a while ago with the help of his dingbat publicist, Jenny Weinman. The Church of Scientology has been harassing us since last year when she pressed charges. Our phones and computers have been tapped, and the church has been outsourcing private investigators and various thugs to follow it and try to intimidate my family under the policy known as fair game. If anything happens to my wife while I'm gone on tour, then you'll know why. All my wife ever wanted was an apology from Danny Masterson for raping her. All she got was a letter from him that would make your skin crawl. Can you imagine how the other three victims feel? Allegations my ass, we are stuffed to rafters in evidence. My wife pressed charges against Danny Masterson a year ago after learning of the other victims that he and the Church of Scientology have silenced. Twitter, TMZ, LAPD are all bought and paid for. Also, let's look at his lyrics to that song, Incurably Innocent, that he wrote about the assault. He said, he keeps hiding your photograph of the moment that you needed to emasculate his. Photograph, but you locked up in the trance of a memory. Photograph of the moment that you needed to emasculate his. Photograph, but you locked up in the trance of a memory. Marching to the coffins on Franklin Avenue, preyed on the anguish, you better run, always dragging a finger across his throat. Man is the fixer to sage the ghost and the faith that awarded his every move. Well, what's the rest of it there? Anyway, you know, it's very poetic, so I don't know how to make heads or tails of that. But I do know that when he says the finger across the throat is actually a Freemasonic symbol for the initiations, the penal sign, right? Is he saying that? I got to be careful here. Is he saying that Danny or maybe himself, they've seen this somewhere? You know, it's just like the vow of silence. It's the symbol for the same message that when you get initiated far enough into a group, you will not divulge the secrets under penalty of death. So, anyway, Cedric and Chrissy, they've been very vocal about this thing for many years. So when the guilty verdict came down, Chrissy posted about it on social media, including criticisms about the supporters of Danny Masterson, Ashton Kutcher, Mila Kunis, and of course the letters they wrote. But what's interesting is that she posted on her Instagram story, she knew about secrets that would end Ashton Kutcher. Let's see here. If you go to mamamia.com, they posted a whole story. It says that she had posted, and I saw this one. I actually saw this one because I saw when it happened, but I didn't take screenshots. Dear Ashton, I know the secrets your role model keeps for you, ones that would end you. Did you forget I was there? You were on speakerphone that night you called Danny on February 21st, 2001. I hear everything. I heard the plan. In my opinion, you're just as sick as your mentor. What are we talking about here? I'm going to tell you about the murder of Ashley Ellerin and how Ashton Kutcher was involved. In a way. Also, I should note that Christina Ricci posted an Instagram story saying that Ashton and Mila should just accept that their friend is a predator and abuser. We just talked about Christina Ricci on the Doja Cat episode recently. She said, people we know as awesome guys can be predators and abusers. Now, she doesn't specifically call out Ashton and Mila, but that's surely what she's referring to. And it's true. Like, he could be an awesome guy to them from their perspective, but, like, he did awful things. So, I don't know. Maybe defending him is a little tough. Like Bill Cosby. I'm sure he made a lot of people laugh. I'm sure a lot of people think he's a funny guy in real life. They did some awful things. Do we excuse that? Do we give him a lighter sentence because he was a good guy outside of that? Let's talk about the murder of Ashley Ellerin. This is going back to where it all started, you know, because Chrissy said she knows something that could end Ashton, and she talks about the date February 21st, 2001. That, of course, was the date that Ashley Ellerin was murdered in her Hollywood Hills apartment. She was, in fact, Ashton Kutcher's girlfriend at the time. I'm going to read to you from Mamma Mia. MammaMia.com. Ashton had called her several times that night and ended up visiting her at her home. He later testified that he spotted liquid on the ground through the window, which he thought was red wine, but it turned out to be blood. After assuming she wasn't home, Kutcher left Ashley's apartment. Michael Gargiulo, who was later dubbed the Hollywood Ripper, was eventually found guilty of her murder. So the Hollywood Ripper, okay. This guy was found guilty of two murders and a third attempt. Michelle Murphy, who fought him off in 2008, good for her. He was sentenced to death many years later. It took till July of 2021. And Ashton Kutcher gave testimony in 2019. Now, if you go to the Sun website, which I've heard is sus, it says that Ashley was an up-and-coming actor. Ashton began dating her that month in February 2001. He was picking her up to take her to a post-Grammys party. And, of course, she didn't answer the door because she was dead. She'd been stabbed 47 times. It was nearly decapitated. And it said that she had previously met the killer, Michael Gargiulo, when she was trying to get a flat tire fixed. He wasn't much older. He was 24 at the time. And apparently he would show up unannounced to fix things in her apartment. But anyways, Ashton said that he went to her apartment that night, knocked. She doesn't answer, and he assumes that she already left for the night because he was apparently late to pick her up. And he kind of felt bad that he was like, oh, man. He said, I saw what I thought was red wine on the carpet, but that wasn't alarming because I went to her house party days before, and it was like a college party. I didn't think much about it. He added, I remember the next day after I heard about what happened, I went to the detectives and said, my fingerprints are on the door. I was freaking out. And of course, that stain turned out to be Ashley's blood. It says that Michael Gargiulo was a former bouncer, air conditioner repairman, and aspiring actor who was convicted in August 2019 for murdering Ashley Ellerin in 2001. He was also convicted of the murder of Maria Bruno, 32, in 2005, but at his sentencing, he argued he shouldn't have been convicted. He said, I'm innocent. I've been framed by tunnel vision detectives. So, if, you know, what is it that Chrissy knows? I have no clue. I don't even want to make those assumptions. And of course, Gargiulo says he's innocent. He's been framed by tunnel vision detectives. But of course, you go to prison, everybody's innocent. But if you stretch your imagination a little bit, we heard that, who said the LAPD was shady on here? Was it Cedric? Yeah, Cedric said that. He says Twitter, TMZ, LAPD are all bought and paid for. Implying that Scientology has them bought and paid for. So, is it possible that the LAPD were the detectives that had the quote-unquote tunnel vision? And maybe, I don't know. I don't know what to think. Chrissy made mention in a, let's see, we already read what she said. But yeah, in conclusion, which you know is the wrap-up portion of the show, that's a pretty bold allegation. And if you knew, if someone has evidence that Ashton Kutcher was more involved with the murder than previously stated, that's a pretty bold accusation. Should one make cryptic statements if it's not true? I don't know. Very strange is all I'm going to say about it. The whole thing is very strange from the top to the bottom. You could see connections of the occult. You've got this murder, Ashton Kutcher, the LAPD, and Cedric, and Chrissy, and all the people involved in the 70s show who were doing the Scientology thing, and Charles Manson, of course. But yeah, a lot of interesting stuff going on here. Lots of smoke. The smoke is building, my friends. And in part three, we might find fire, okay? We're going to deep dive into Ashton Kutcher. It's the Ashton Kutcher rabbit hole. We're going to talk about this guy. He seems like a total angel, right? Like an America's sweetheart story. Well, let's talk about these venture capitalist efforts. Let's talk about the people that he's got connections with. I've got 6 degrees of separation between him and Epstein. Bill Clinton. Ron Burkle. If you listen to the Twin Peaks episodes, you know those names, Ron Burkle. And we'll talk about all the companies that he's buying into, Thorn, and how it's pushing surveillance, and the CIA, and oh my goodness. A lot of bold ideas are going to fall out of this third part. And then we're going to wrap this whole 70 show conspiracy topic up. So stay subscribed to the show. And if you want to help the show, you want to support me, you know what you can do? Leave a 5-star review. That's right. You got to counteract all the 1-star whiners who are surely disinformation trolls who don't like what I'm saying because I'm talking about some very famous, powerful people here. I need you to drop a 5-star review. That's the only way. That's how you help me. That's how you help the show. It's real simple. I like to drone on and on so that you can pick your phone out of your pocket right now while I'm talking. And you're going to pull open the app. And you're going to mash the little button. Hopefully it's the Apple Podcast app. I don't know, whatever app you're using. Drop that 5-star. Because that's how you're going to help the show. Right? You're a part of this now. You're implicated with me. You got to do this. So drop that review. 5 stars. Till next time. And stay subscribed to the show. You better hit the subscribe button. Because part three, you thought we were deep. No, my friends. We're not even close. We got to go all the way down this rabbit hole. And that's up Ashton Kutcher's hole. So stay subscribed and stay woke.